Prepare to be astonished!
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here this evening with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society.
The
yes,
special co-host.
The special. You are special.
But we do have a silent special guest.
We do.
Your darling, one of your darling daughters.
Six-year-old.
Quiet. And she's going to start kindergarten, or she just started kindergarten.
Just started. Fabulous. Yeah. Off to a two-day start, which is a good little, you know.
But do you want to give a shout-out to the teacher?
Mrs. Gardner.
Oh, Mrs. Gardner.
Perfectly adorable kindergarten teacher. I wanted to hug her, too.
Everything you would expect in a kindergarten teacher. And I love the mommy-ness of you. We were concerned about her making noise, and you put headphones on her. She's got a little touch screen, and you said no talking.
Yeah.
And for the record, I'm okay if she talks.
Oh.
Because I like kids. You've got the perfect age. I mean, mine are old and no longer fun.
Right. Because they tell you exactly what they think.
That's true. And they don't. And they think I'm an idiot, which may or may not be true. But and I can say that because I know they're not going to listen. So
yes,
it'll never get back to them.
There you go.
So she'll get right to the show. We got kind of it's still going to be local history.
It's fun tonight.
Though some people may question whether it's history, but it is history.
For sure.
So, but let's get to the big history highlights.
Got it.
And these are the things that happen tomorrow, mm-hmm. September 13th. And there's a couple that I was going to choose because nothing overwhelmed me as the history highlight.
Okay.
And the first one was going to be one of my choices. 1501, Michelangelo begins work on his statue of David, a masterpiece of Renaissance sculpture.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
It is important. But he's naked.
Yes. That's why it sticks with you, right?
You know, we'll talk about this more, but we had a replica of the David statue that was used in the Goonies on exhibit once at the Heritage Museum before we opened the Film Museum. And one day I come in and my front desk staff hands me a note very kind of timidly and says, a member was in and had some suggestions for whoever's in charge. And I said, oh, okay. And I read through the note and there were some really good points. And then the last thing referenced the fact that we had a naked man on exhibit. It was a little more specific than that.
Yeah.
And I was perplexed. I said, I don't know what this means. And then she pointed at the David statue and said, I think she was talking about that. It kind of perplexed me.
Yeah.
that was trouble. But anyway, 1916. Children's author Roald Dahl is born. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
James and the Giant Peach.
Good ones.
You know, I've read James and the Giant Peach, but I've never actually read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I don't remember. I think I did read it. I don't. I mean, the movie's great, too.
The Oompa Loompas kind of creep me out.
Yeah.
In the movie.
It's for older kids. We haven't watched that with our little kids yet.
I remember when I was in grad school once, I was opening up something in front of my professor and mentor, and I said, maybe there's a golden ticket. And she stopped and she said, I didn't know you kids knew that.
Oh.
And I thought, it's on TV like every other day.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't I know that? 1922, the Straw Hat Riot begins in New York City as people protest the right to wear straw hats beyond the accepted end date of September 15th.
That's an interesting one.
1922, didn't we have anything better to worry about than straw hats?
Well, is this kind of like you can't wear white shoes after Labor Day?
White shoes or white pants?
White shoes.
Oh, see, I'm okay with that. White pants, I disagree with. But if it's shoes, I'm okay with you not wearing white shoes after.
You probably shouldn't wear white pants.
Ever or after Labor Day?
Either.
All right. My wife is probably going to agree with that. Let's see, 1948. I like this one. Margaret Chase Smith, Republican from Maine, is elected senator. She's the first woman to serve in both houses of Congress.
Oh.
She had been the House of Representatives, and then she gets into
the
higher chamber, as they say, the Senate.
Yeah, good for her.
And I like her name, Margaret Chase Smith.
Yeah.
1977, first TV viewer discretion warning is issued. And nobody, we should have a contest, but people just Google it then. The TV show was Soap. Really, Soap was what they were warned about. I think because they had a character, Billy Crystal, that was gay.
Oh, interesting.
I think they had to warn everybody about this.
Oh,
I could be wrong, but I know that Soap was the one that the warning was issued for.
Oh, okay, the show. Okay.
1990, it has nothing to do with Oregon or Astoria or Clatsop County, but Law & Order debuts on TV. I've never actually watched one, but aren't there like 12 different series called Law & Order now?
Oh, they're fabulous.
Or yeah. CSI or yeah. I don't know. So I figured that was significant.
It is, yeah.
2001, the civilian aircraft traffic resumes in the U.S. after the September 11th, 2001 attacks.
Yeah.
Which begs the question, where were you and what were you doing?
I was at college, University of Miami. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was in a dorm where, unfortunately, we had parents that were in the building.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah.
So you weren't broadcasting or anything yet?
No. We did have a television station on campus, but I was also a resident assistant in the dorm. And so I did have a young girl who lost her dad that day.
Oh, my goodness. Yikes. 2004, Oprah gives away nearly 300 new cars.
Oh.
You win a car, you win a car, you win a car.
Gotta love Oprah.
So for our listeners, sorry, you win nothing from us.
Yeah.
Except for 30 minutes of marginal entertainment.
Yes, the joy.
But the history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history. 1955, Swiss inventor George de Mestral is granted a patent for what would become known as Velcro.
Ooh, am I
right?
That's good. Yep. I'll give you that one.
So how do you feel about Velcro in place of shoelaces on shoes?
Oh, it's amazing.
See, I agree. Yes. I kind of hate that I like still have shoelaces on my shoes.
Yes. My six-year-old's kind of in that transition age, and I'm dreading it because it's just like, just keep using the Velcro. It's so much easier.
Yes.
It's a sure thing every time your shoe is on. You're not going to trip on it.
It's not going to fall off.
And it looks fine.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
So I'm going to advocate.
There we go.
Right here. That we do with shoelaces, all shoes have Velcro.
And we should have the same colors that kids have too, because their shoes are way cuter.
Well, that I don't know about. I do like the light up stuff though.
Yeah.
That kind of makes me laugh.
There you go.
Okay, but since I mentioned the David statue.
Yes.
For Goonies fandom around the world, which is local history.
It is.
36 years ago, Goonies was filmed here and released. Well, it was filmed here 36 and a half years ago. But it was released 36 and a half years ago.
Yeah.
36 years ago. So the David statue features prominently in that movie. It's in the boy's house, and they knock it over and break it.
Yep.
And
an important piece.
They get all upset.
Yep.
Because mom's favorite piece. And they glue a certain piece on the wrong way.
Correct.
But we have one of the unbroken David statues from the movie on exhibit at the Oregon Film Museum.
Oh,
and supposedly all of the statues, they were smashing them.
Oh.
And somebody saw this one thrown into the dumpster, and it didn't break. And they jumped in and grabbed it before anybody realized.
Fun.
So it is the only existing on-screen David statue at this point. So we thought we'd do some Goonies fun facts today. So the Goonies was shot almost entirely in sequence over the course of about 5 months. Most of the film was shot in Oregon.
To get the most realistic reactions, the kids weren't allowed to see the ship until the actual shooting of that scene. This didn't quite work as planned, as many of them yelled, "Holy
something."
Yes. When they first glimpsed the pirate ship, this scene then did have to be reshot.
And that was part of Richard Donner, the director's idea, was, I want this to be like legitimate, the surprise of the kids, so they didn't let them see it.
Yeah.
And he didn't expect that they would curse,
because
they were little kids.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, and big buildup, too.
Right? That's right. So there was a Goonies oath that was cut out of the film. "I will never betray my Goondock friends. We will stick together until the whole world ends. Through heaven and hell and nuclear war, good pals like us will stick like tar. In the city or the country, or the forest or the boonies, I am proudly declared a fellow Goonie."
I love that.
I didn't read that smoothly. I botched it. I will never be a Goonie now.
Yeah. Goondocks. Goonie for life. Actor Corey Haim auditioned for the role of Mouth, but lost it to Corey Feldman. Poor guy.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
I think Corey Feldman was the right person. Corey Haim wouldn't have worked, I don't think.
I mean, Corey Feldman, it's just, it works just right. Chunk, actor Jeff Cohen, got the chicken pox a few days before filming. fearful he might be replaced, he came to work anyway. Look for a few spots on his torso when he does the truffle shuffle.
You can see him. I've gone back to watch after I found this.
That's awful.
He's a spreader. He was potentially spreading.
Oh, man.
And you know, he's a good friend of the Oregon Film Museum, the Chamber of Commerce. He loves Astoria. Yeah. He joked one time that he should move up here and run for mayor, and we said you'd probably get elected.
Yeah.
And
isn't he a lawyer too?
He is. He's,
yeah, he's like super smart.
He is super smart. And it's very funny because he was very worried about COVID, and I wanted to throw this at him that, okay, but you know, you were potentially spreading.
Great. Make him feel bad. He was a kid.
I didn't want to bring that up
though. Yeah.
I felt badly.
Some of the kids' real life parents were the parents they hugged at the end of the film. That's kind of cute.
That is fun.
And that's on the beach.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The final scene.
Fun. There was a scene with a giant octopus cut out of the film.
But what, yeah, and people can find that on the internet.
Okay.
You can find anything out there on the internets. But there's still a reference, even though it was that scene was edited. I believe it's Data that says something at the end that is still in it, like, oh, it was scariest with the octopus.
Oh, funny.
At first, for years, people are like, what's he talking about? Without knowing
the,
there's a deleted scene.
Interesting. Sean Astin, Mikey, was allowed to keep the map from the film. His mother threw it away a few years later while cleaning. Now, she should have known better.
Yes. Fun fact, though, is that there's kind of like blood on it, and it's real blood. The prop guy that made it, like, slit his finger a little bit and dripped real blood all over it. So, yeah, gross.
It was Josh Brolin's movie debut.
And who knew that one of the Goonies would grow up to be Thanos and destroy half the universe?
He's good. I like him. In a small goof, Sean Astin, who plays Mikey, calls Josh Brolin by his actual name, not his character's name. It's in the scene after Chunk breaks the water cooler in the basement of the abandoned restaurant.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Sean Astin's one-eyed Willy speech was technically improvised.
Yeah, so Richard Donner didn't want to just have him read a script, so he kind of gave him some highlights and then said, you know, do you think you could, you know, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
And then basically just started filming him, and he didn't quite realize that he was fully on this was the take. So it's kind of improvised, but
yeah,
he just kind of had
very serious.
Yeah.
To get a more naturalistic performance out of Astin in the scene in which he tells his fellow Goonies about the legend of One-Eyed Willy, Donner had the child actor improvise in an offbeat way. Donner simply told Astin the story. Well, this is what you just said. Then they just kept those cameras rolling. Let's see. Production designer J. Michael Riva thought the prop treasure map looked too new, so he made it look over 300 years old. He spent the afternoon aging it. After pouring coffee on the map, he added, just like you said, some blood. The prop department was out of paint, so in a quick bit of improv, he cut his finger. It sounds so painful.
Yes.
I mean, a paper cut is the worst.
You know, I'd peel a scab, but I wouldn't like slice my finger open.
Oh, yeah.
I could never even do, like, way back when I was in high school biology class.
Oh.
They had you like prick your finger to do a little blood thing.
Oof.
I don't know if they'd even allow that today.
But that was
like ghastly to me. I couldn't even imagine. I had to make somebody else do it, and I looked away. It was horrible.
The bats in the underground caves were actually just bow ties and wads of black paper mache blown out of air cannons.
I think that's one of my favorite things.
It's pretty realistic thinking about it. Goonies takes place in the same universe as Gremlins. Believing Chunk is pranking him over the phone again, the police officer, Chunk, recalls one of Chunk's stories about little creatures that multiply when you pour water on them, which is a reference to the movie Gremlins. Steven Spielberg was an executive producer on both films, and screenwriter Chris Columbus wrote both movies as well. Corey Feldman also appeared in both movies.
Corey Feldman, he links to everything.
Yep.
he is the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon for Oregon film.
Is he?
Yes. We've linked him in the film museum. There's a fun little chart text panel that we only have about 20 or 30 of them, but we have a 3-ring binder that's all of the films ever made in Oregon that we can link to Corey Feldman in 6 steps or less.
Wow.
Even The Fisherman's Bride made in 1909. And that one's pretty easy. There's like 3 steps or 4 steps to get him there.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we called it the Corey Connection.
Huh. And he's not from Oregon.
He's not from Oregon, but he has an uncanny connection to a lot of Oregon film and filmmaking.
Yeah.
So the, that was everything on our list.
Yeah.
But one of the other really cool things, and when we used to do with Jeff Daly, the Glam Tram driving tour of Shot in Astoria, I had a printout that I could show people. because George Lucas and Steven Spielberg always do little hidden Easter eggs in their movies for the other one. And if you screenshot freeze the ship, the Inferno, at near the end, and really zoom in, you can see R2-D2 and C-3PO from Star Wars.
Really?
And they're, no, I'm sorry, just R2-D2. But he's really there.
Oh, funny.
And, you know, from a long way around screenshot, or just like watching the movie, you don't even notice because it just looks like a barrel or something. But when you zoom in, it is very clearly R2-D2.
Oh.
And I would tell that, and then the people on the glam tram would say, oh, come on, and I'd pass out the sheet. And they'd be like, oh, my goodness, it's true.
Oh, how fun.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah.
Okay, so we knew that wouldn't be that long. So the second most asked about movie, Made in Oregon.
Yeah.
You would think it would be Free Willy.
Yeah. Kindergarten Cop. I mean, there's not, so many. Yeah.
It's actually Animal House.
Animal House,
which is an Oregon film. It's not a Clatsop County film because we run the Oregon Film Museum, not the Astoria. So we thought we'd also share some Animal House fun facts.
Yeah.
And speaking of Kevin Bacon, it was the film debut of Kevin Bacon.
I didn't know that.
It is. He plays one of the cadets. When he went to the premiere, the ushers didn't believe that he was really in the movie because nobody had heard of Kevin Bacon.
Right.
So instead of sitting with the cast, he was forced to sit with everyone else.
At the end of the movie, it states that Niedermeyer was killed by his own troops in Vietnam. John Landis directed a segment of The Twilight Zone, the movie, 1983, in which some soldiers can be heard talking about their regret for killing Lieutenant Niedermeyer.
You know, I've never gone since I got into this. I never went back and watched Twilight Zone, the movie, to see that and hear that. I'm kind of digging that,
though. But it's there. Yeah.
John Landis claims the Universal Pictures president, Ned Tannen, was vehemently against the Dexter Lake Club scene. He believed it would cause race riots. And of course, the scene is where it's an African-American, predominantly African-American club, and the white frat boys go in and hijinks commence.
Yes.
So he wasn't sure what he should do it. So Landis screened the film for Richard Pryor, who wrote to Universal Pictures president Ned Tannen, and he just wrote, "Ned, Animal House is funny, and white people are crazy, Richard," is what he signed it, and the scene stayed in the film. So Richard Pryor basically was like, come on, it's funny.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong here. It's not going to cause race riots.
Yeah. Donald Sutherland lost out on quite a bit of money. He had a chance to take a percentage of the gross, but instead chose the $75,000 upfront fee. Had he taken the gross, it would be worth between $3 to $4 million. Sutherland didn't think the movie would do that well. Still, $75,000 for 3 days of work isn't a bad payout.
You know, that's a tough one.
It is.
If you don't think the film's going to be anything,
it's a gamble.
$75,000, sure. I think like the key people in Star Wars, I think they all got like a percentage, and they signed on, and it included like the marketing. So all the action figures and all that other stuff, they all got a percentage. I mean, tiny, like between the three main stars, it was like 1% total, but 1% of a gajillion dollars.
I would think, I'm sure contracts have improved since then, right?
Probably. Otis Day, who played, was played by Dwayne Jesse. Otis Day's performance was so successful, he actually changed his name to Otis Day, and he still tours and records as Otis Day in the Nights,
the characters
in the movie. And we had him at our big, awareness party for the Oregon Film Museum in Portland about three or 4 years ago, and he performed.
Oh, how fun.
He was excellent. He was amazing.
Oh, great. The movie was filmed at the University of Oregon. It was the beneficiary of the University of Oregon president feeling regret over denying The Graduate from 1967 from being filmed there. The name of the college does not appear in the credits at the request of the president, though. It was originally supposed to be filmed at the University of Missouri, but the school president denied permission after reading the script. I mean, it fits.
Yeah,
I mean,
it does.
Yeah.
I'm torn on that. I mean, to make your university nefarious and world famous.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, there's certainly some questionable moral things in the movie.
Sure.
So I don't know. I'm torn. You know, although I guess I would have the same attitude if somebody wanted to film in the Flavel House.
Yeah, I think they
what is it?
Yeah, they took the money. They could do the promotion that they wanted to, right? I mean,
members of the cast decided they wanted to get into their roles by attending a real frat party at SAE House, and I don't know which fraternity that is, at the University of Oregon. The frat boys didn't like the actors being there, and a brawl broke out. John Belushi wasn't there, but when he heard about the brawl, he had to be physically restrained from going back to start another fight.
I love that. That sounds about right. Stephen First, who played Flounder, buys marbles from a female clerk. That woman is First's wife.
Okay. I don't think she was his wife when they were filming.
Okay.
But that's like one of my favorite lines from this movie, Animal House, is, "May I have 10,000 marbles, please?" And I don't know why. I just crack up. I mean, I don't even have to be watching it to see that. Just say that line and I kind of laugh. And if we ever expand the film museum, I want this exhibit to have like a big giant
10,000
case
marbles.
With 10,000 marbles in it. Because I don't know. I don't even know what 10,000 marbles would look like.
Yeah, you want to be the person asking somebody for 10,000 marbles.
I mean, I have no. You could tell me it would just be like, oh, a 3-foot by 3-foot cube.
Yeah.
And I'd say, okay. You could tell me it'd be like a 10-foot by 10-foot cube. I'd say, okay.
You'll find the space for it.
And there's probably some statistician out there that's going, okay, that's a stupid easy equation, but I've never done it.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go for the future. Belushi got his inspiration for the Blues Brothers, formed with Dan Aykroyd, and from Curtis Salgado, a musician he saw while at a local nightclub during the filming.
At that party that we had Otis Day at, we also had Curtis Salgado.
Oh, really?
And he was amazing.
Oh.
And it really is. He dresses, I mean, John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, it's a complete just knockoff of his mannerisms, his dress, his outfit, the way he plays. I mean, it really is just a complete knockoff. And it was really entertaining.
Harold Ramis, who co-wrote the film, used his college days as an inspiration. The scene where Otter and Boone are hitting golf balls at ROTC members was something he actually did.
Oh, no. More money was